Running a business keeps you on your toes. Wouldn't it be great if your internet connection could keep up? Introducing Business Class Fiber from Vox. It's super fast, reliable, and highly cost-effective. You get unlimited calls to all SA destinations, and it's scalable. So no matter the size of your business, you've still got room to grow. Get connected with Business Class Fiber from Vox and see what super fast internet really means. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Bitco is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. Bitco.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Thank you for listening to the Tech Central podcast. I'm Duncan MacLeod. I'm on an internet call and live stream today with Sitem Biso Khumalo, CEO of a really interesting technology startup called Lepster. Sitem Biso started Lepster with his friend Nkosana Mabuza, who I met in 2016 for a discussion. These guys have a really interesting story to tell. First, Sitem, welcome to the podcast and thanks so much for making the time to talk to Tech Central today.
Thank you so much, Duncan. Thanks for having me, and my greetings to all the listeners.
Thanks for joining us. Sitem, let's start with that backstory that I mentioned. Nkosana, when I met him in 2016, told me that you grew up in rural KwaZulu-Natal. You went to high school in a remote area, I think somewhere between Dundee and Ulundi. Please tell us that story and how you progressed from that environment, from that upbringing, into the high-tech world of software development.
Well, so I've had quite a great mix of experiences throughout my life. Having grown up in one of the most rural parts of the country. I got to experience the extreme side of being in a rural area. So I basically grew up there my entire life. I was born in Durban originally, and then we moved to that area, way back. I spent the biggest part of my life there, and only in 2007 I moved to Pretoria. I studied at the University of Pretoria, which is where I met Nkosana on my first year. And it just so happened that somehow our visions of the future in technology were somehow in synergy. And we really kicked things off back at university, but we officially started working together back in 2012, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, but coming from a rural area and progressing into the high tech area of software engineering and software development, when did you first get exposure to computers?
In high school, I think I was doing the 10th grade. So I used to go to our small library. And there was a lot of books about computers, some even about programming. But the rough part was that, seeing as we didn't even have electricity in the area, there was no way to actually apply those skills. So I used to write code on paper and just try and run it in my mind.
Oh, wow.
And try to think about, different scenarios where it would or would not work. And in grade 11, I started walking with a friend of mine. We would walk about 5 to 7 kilometers, I'm not sure exactly, to go play with computers and at this other school that was on the other side of the area. It was a small township school named Langazela. We used to go there just to see a computer running and to type it and learn how to type. So my interest really started then, and I used to read a lot of encyclopedias and such, and computing revealed itself as one of the technologies that will have a great role to play in the advancement of the technologies to come. So I really thought I ought to be part of this. some point, one way or the other. And fortunately, that dream did come true. So I'm really grateful to be here now.
Okay. Did you have friends back then who were also into computers? Were your parents, did your parents influence you in any way to take this career choice?
Not really, to be honest. So my parents were very supportive, but, being slightly old fashioned and, coming from a disadvantaged background themselves, they really didn't have, a lot of ideas regarding where the trajectory of my career would go. Actually, in 2011, I had to explain to my mother what I did for a living. And my mother doesn't speak any English, so she speaks Zulu. And I had to try and explain that I'm a software engineer in Zulu, which was really hard to do. But they were very supportive. They still are. My mother still is. And my late father was very supportive as well. Even though a lot of times they wouldn't really know what was going on, even during my varsity days, they would just take my word for it. And I thank them for that because they really taught me a great deal about independence. And I've been on my own since I was 16 when I came to varsity. So it's, they've played quite a tremendous role in my journey so far.
Great. Now, you mentioned that you met Nkosana while you were both studying information science, I think it was, at the University of Pretoria.
Yes.
What did you guys do after graduating? I believe you didn't go into business together immediately. You went your own ways. I think Nkosana mentioned to me when we last met that he joined Accenture, and I think you joined a small software development house. Just tell us a bit about that.
So for the first year that Nkosana was in the industry, I think I taught at the university for 1 year. But soon after that, I had already decided that in 2 years' time, I wanted to start a company. But for that, I would require a lot of experience on the technical side of things because I had already sort of had an idea that I want to be in a space where I'm able to exert a lot of influence. But to do so, I needed some experience. So instead of working for corporates, I decided to go work for very small to medium-sized companies, development houses, because, due to the lack of resources in those companies, they would really make the best out of your abilities and try to squeeze every little juice you have. And in return, you gain a lot of experience in a very short space of time. So 2 years later, I had already met Nkosana, and that was basically the end of our day jobs when we finally left our day jobs to start working on Labster. We got really, really poor in the process, but it was all worth it.
Well, it's a big step for anyone to go out on their own and start their own company. I mean, was it?
Definitely.
Did you have any reservations about it? Did you worry about starting your own business? I mean, it's a lot easier to work in corporate environments for other people than to strike out on your own and do your own thing. What was running through your mind at the time?
It was very difficult, but I was really excited, and that excitement has basically sustained the both of us, Nkosana and I. I mean, knowing that you have someone next to you who believes in the same thing that you believe in is a great deal of motivation. Plus, the people that you surround yourself with, my family and friends, they were very supportive. Even though it's a very lonely time, because that's when you actually realize, who's there to help you and who's not in the position to be your friend going forward, for that matter. But living the comfort of my day job wasn't such a big problem for me because of the passion I had in what I wanted to venture into. I was very excited. Even during the rough times, I mean, you would get people approaching me with, irresistible job offers. But with discipline, I mean, we had to exercise a lot of discipline to try and turn those down and try to focus on our direction. And, I was able to draw a lot of strength from Gosana's passion, and I hope that he was able to do the same from mine too.
Okay. So you started out and you developed some software called Black Hole, which I think was a service platform of sorts for software developers, and then this later led to something called Space Decode. Just take us through that part of the story.
Okay, so first of all, before we even just get into that, maybe let me just highlight a little bit about our approach to development. So basically, the founding of the company and our initiatives are based on the notion that the best way to predict the future is to create it. And so our approach is looking further into the future and looking at the trajectory of where the tech space is going right now and thinking about how we can be a big part of influencing that future in terms of inventiveness and innovation. So our process involves a lot of research and development. So the first product that we developed, which was a backend as a service platform, and we piloted it at the time, but it was at a bit of an unfortunate time where we had basically discovered two competitors at the time, one of which was a company called Parse and another called Firebase, which were both acquired by big players, one by Facebook and one by Google. But the struggle that we had down the line was that even though we had some viable technology to use, the business model around it was one part that actually beat us. But so what we did is that we took the lessons from there forward into developing Space Decode, which was meant to be an end-to-end software development platform to try and streamline automate the software development workflow. That is the platform that we piloted quite a bit, and we built some traction on it and took a lot of lessons from, which is now what we have repackaged as Engine One now that it's actually ready to be commercially viable.
Okay. We'll talk a bit more about Engine One a bit later in our discussion, but you hit a lucky break back in 2014 when you entered a competition called SparkUp. An organization called Net Profit, and I know there's an interesting story there. You guys had basically no money, and you were sponsored by a guy called Derek Kotzer, who was
MLab SA.
MLab SA, yeah, he was the CEO of that organization, and that led you to a meeting with the guys from RSA Web, Rob Gilmore and Mark Slingsby. In Cape Town. But there's an interesting story here because you had to go down to this meeting, I believe, and you basically had no money to your name, and you went to the airport without tickets to get to Cape Town. Tell us what happened there.
So first of all, we went down for the SparkUp conference, and we were actually sponsored by MLab. So when we got there, we met Rob, who introduced us to Mark, and they said, we love your technology. We love the direction that you guys are taking, and it would be great if we can come on board from the investment perspective. And we were really excited about that, but we had to come back to Pretoria for one reason. I can't remember exactly the reason, I think about 2 weeks down the line, we receive a call from, I think it was Mark or Rob, one of the two, and they like, let's set up a meeting for, I think it was the 17th of July, and it was just a few days from, I think it was like in 2 days' time at the time, and we had no money to our name, and I was temporarily staying in Gosana's apartment along with his fiance, and so what happened was on the day that we would have a meeting at two o'clock that afternoon, we woke up at 6 a.m. and went to the airport, and the thinking was we have to make it down to Cape Town or we might as well just kiss this goodbye. But the thinking was when we get there, we will then try to explore different avenues to actually raise the money. And mind you, we had failed to raise the money in the preceding 2 days. But eventually we managed to get a hold of Derek, the CEO of MLab again, at a very inconvenient time. I think it was around 6:30. And we said, we are at the airport and we intend to go to Cape Town for a meeting with potential investors. And he was like, oh, great. Thanks for letting me know. So are you guys on your way? And we're like, yes, almost. But we don't have tickets. And so he's like, what, flight tickets? And we're like, yeah. But long story short, Derek and MLab came to our aid, and they made the trip possible, even though after that we were left with like 30 rands in our pocket to try and get food with it and all of that. But fortunately, we managed to close the deal quite quickly with RSOE Web, and they were on board from the first day, and they really supported us getting us to where we are right now. And it's been an interesting journey since then.
Right. You guys actually moved down to Cape Town and joined RSOE Web. Is that right?
Yes. So when we went there for that meeting, we didn't actually come back.
Did you have a return ticket?
No, we didn't have return tickets either. But we thought that we should take maximum advantage of the opportunity of being hosted at RSOE Web, and we were, you know, in close proximity with Mark and Rob, mm-hmm. whom we very much admire, especially in the technology space, and they were, you know, there to guide us. So we said, let's take the opportunity now. And then we'll figure out how to raise the tickets money to go visit our family later in 3 months' time. So we stuck around Cape Town, but we ended up actually staying for a year there. Okay. While during the development of Space Decode and the piloting of it.
Okay. Now, you're based in Centurion outside Pretoria now.
Yes.
You came back. Why did you – what's the story? Why did you leave Cape Town?
Okay. So leaving Cape Town, we actually went – I had to go to the US to pilot Space Decode and to try and learn the market there, because at that point we had realized that there was some sort of divergence in terms of what is deemed as important in the portion of the industry that we were trying to serve. So what we decided to do, Kosana and I, was because it was just the two of us at that point, we said if we are going to build a team, Cape Town is not very reasonable in terms of, especially in terms of property, if you want to be around the city. And also, I mean, the competition of talent, I mean, it's tough all around South Africa, but we had to weigh in a couple of options. And Centurion ended up being the best choice for us, because the office that we are renting now, we have the entire office, and we would, the rental amount for that, we would only manage to secure about 3 desks in the co-working space down in Cape Town. And in that office, we can accommodate up to around 15, if we push it, maybe 20 people. So we had to, weigh our options and see where the trade-offs are and where we can particularly leverage the, you know, what we have in front of us to try and make this happen.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Engine One, what is it exactly? How does it work? How would people use it? And what are your plans for it?
All right. So first of all, I'll start by saying Engine One is an initiative, and it's for us. So we had to devise a two-pronged strategy after realizing that we really believe in our way of developing technology, our R&D process, and we really believe that this is an approach that we should be taking as technology professionals, especially in the continent of Africa. So what we decided was to set up Engine One such that it has the business component as well as the community component. Right now we have a community of more than 350 developers spread across South Africa, Mozambique, Kenya, and Nigeria. And the most important thing around the community side of things is to spread the word regarding this approach of developing technology, which really revolves around thinking about what is coming up in the future and how we can be an integral part of that. And most importantly, using first principle thinking to start taking a leading role in the development of software related innovations, especially in Africa. So that's the community part of things. And then we have the business side of things, which involve our core technologies. And so our short term For the business side of things is that we hope to reduce the cost of software development by up to 40% in the next 5 years. And this is all based on the research that we've conducted. And so our initiatives are streamlined to make that happen. But in the long term, we hope to demystify the software development process as a whole, because the industry itself is a cocoon in a way. It can quite easily become a silo in the context of organizations where non-technical people are included. And seeing as it is a big driver in advancing technology and in actually shaping our future, we believe that it is in everyone's best interest to try and make software development easier and more accessible to the masses, because we create more opportunities, but at the same time, we are properly integrating it into the interests of the business in the context of an enterprise setup. So now, going deep into now what Engine One, the product, is, the core of our technology is a distributed, fault-tolerant, real-time file synchronization service that is based on private blockchains. And now the practical applications of that are the products that we are just polishing up right now for release. One of which is the version control service that is specifically designed to reduce the cognitive load on developers. So we're trying to make sure that developers spend more time writing code than they do managing it, because our research point tells us that developers spend roughly 3 hours per day, 2 to 3 hours per day on. All right. So what I was still saying, so the products that we are bringing up now, two of them, the first one being the version control service that is designed to help developers spend more time coding and less time managing code. And the second one, which we will release first, actually, is the server synchronization service that will allow DevOps engineers to create consistent server clusters that are whose deployments are repeatable. And this is applicable to a different number of scenarios, one of which is being able to provide some sort of redundancy in terms of maintaining services and keeping them up and running. It could be backups and it could also be deployment. So right now the focus at Labster right now, what we're really working on is the two products, which are both based on the same technology, which is the distributed file synchronization service. But the first one that we are releasing in a few weeks' time is the server synchronization service, which will then be followed by the version control service that we'll then release at a later stage. The development, actually, we kicked off the development with the version control service, but it's still in the QA stages, because it involves quite a bit of, it has a bit of intensity in terms of the collaboration side of things. So we want to get the server edition out first, because it is less demanding in that regard, and we basically are also using it in the background as a platform to polish up the synchronization service to make sure that it is ready for day-to-day usage by developers.
Okay. Are there particular types of developers that you're targeting, or is it across the board? Are there particular dev tools, technologies that are more applicable for the platform that you're building here?
No, so it is across the board, and so basically our mandate here is to just allow developers to just start working. Usually, in a day of a software developer, it includes a lot of running of commands, making sure the code is updated, making sure everyone has the same copy, all of that. So we are trying to automate that so that developers can really just focus on the task at hand. So whether right now you are using Subversion or Git or any other version control services, so we have direct support for three of them. The most popular one, which is Git, SVN, as well as Mercurial. So if you are using any of those version control systems, Engine One is able to plug on top of that and then help you go. So basically automate your workflow in terms of collaboration.
Okay. So if I'm a software developer, are there any of these tools I can download at this point, or are they still in pre-release phase?
Yeah, so they're still in pre-release phase, but we're quite closing in. So if you're really, if you're interested, so you can go to engine1.io and sign up for early release. So we will basically be picking up people in the order of their arrival on the first come first served basis, and giving them access to the product as we're rolling it out. As I said, we are only a couple of weeks away. We are very close, and that database of people signing up is growing quite rapidly as well. So if you intend to be one of the first few to gain access, it'll be best if you act on it now.
Okay, so you're going to be doing this in a phased, limited approach, giving people access bit by bit rather than just opening it up to everyone immediately.
Yes, definitely.
Okay.
Yes, definitely. Because so we've placed some significant investment in the development of the technology itself. So it is quite complex. And it is in our best interest to ensure quality and to make sure that we are able to maintain the service in the best way possible. So, and the best approach we think is the one for this is to roll it out in phases.
Okay. Okay.
Yes.
So, how has this been funded so far? Have you have the guys from RSA Web come on board as shareholders? Who are the investors in the business, and what do you see the revenue model being?
Okay, so first of all, so we've been with RSA Web since the beginning, and they're still part of our investors right now.
Mm-hmm.
But they were our sort of early stage in investors, so our seed investors at the time. Now they are part of our board, so they're continuously giving us advice going forward. But we've gone on to actually raise another round of funding. Through the Technology Innovation Agency, they've also come on board as the investors. So it was they had quite an extensive process in terms of selecting who to invest to invest on, and actually it was quite an honor to be amongst those companies because the process is quite intensive, but also it has bought us quite a significant amount of runway for us to see this through and to eventually get it to market. And from the business model perspective, we are really seeing as our biggest target here is to make the biggest impact possible. So we are really shooting for volumes. As such, the business models that we are looking around are ones that are targeted at encouraging rapid adoption, whilst obviously making the company self-sustaining. So we will be in a startup phase for at least another year, probably even more. But what we are really focusing on is targeting these volumes and looking, then seeing how that goes from the revenue standpoint. We may actually go for another round of funding, preferably internationally, which is what we've sort of prepared for, especially in America, and sort of paving the way for that possibility. But if things go well in terms of the revenue side of things, maybe we will try and be self-sustaining and grow organically.
All right. So in terms of revenue, are you going to offer these tools as almost like a freeware or a shareware type of model where people can try it out and if they like it, they can then subscribe to it? What's your thinking there?
So we actually intend to make it as free as possible for developers, individual developers. We actually don't really want to charge them.
Mm-hmm.
Where our business model exercises lie are in terms of the enterprise side of things, so the business side of things, where the tools are leveraged to actually improve the processes within the company. So our business models so far are designed around that. So we hope to make it free for the longest time possible for developers. But obviously, business models can change from time to time. But that is our interest at this point. And also, we are trying a lot to not like, for instance, with the server edition of Engine One in respect to privacy and security, and but also in terms of cost, we are trying as much as possible to leverage the the infrastructure, the servers that the developers or the DevOps engineers may already have, so that we're not incurring too much cost as to even start charging them. So it is in our best interest to try and lower that possibility as much as we can.
Okay. It sounds, though, from what you said just now, that you've got global ambitions. This is not just going to be a South African product. You're looking at international expansion and possible international fundraising as well. We've seen a lot of South African tech startups moving to Silicon Valley to be in the heart of the global tech action. Is that something that's in your future as well, or do you believe you can build a global technology business like this from South Africa?
Actually, we've already scaffolded the structure that allows us to take advantage of the American presence as well as the South African presence. So what we really want is to keep the development, to maintain the development in South Africa, because this is then where what really becomes the hub of developing the technology, which is basically where we want to invest the most amounts of effort. But what we've done is that we have a registered entity and maintained in the US for the commercial side of things, because we've over the years basically learned that from the commercial standpoint, it is much easier to launch things from these first world countries. But we won't be completely moving the, however, we do plan to have part of our commercial, strategy being executed that side, even though we maintain the development in South Africa.
Okay. And you can find the dev skills readily here, can you, in South Africa that you need?
Yes. It's actually, the competition for talent is quite tough, and I mean, looking at some of the technologies that we are using, our software stack involves technologies like Go and Python, etc., which not so scarce, but also not so abundant. So we are constantly in competition for talent, but it does come slightly cheaper than it would in the US, for instance. So there are trade-offs to all approaches. And already right now, so we are hiring and looking for engineers. And if anyone is interested, it's all on the engine1.io website. We are hiring link there. We're looking for more engineers to start growing the team.
Great stuff. It's all very exciting. Sitembiso Khumalo is CEO of Lepster. All the best of luck with your venture, and I look forward to seeing how you guys progress. Engine1.io is the website if you're a developer and want to sign up for early access. Go there and put your details in. Sita, thanks so much for talking to Tech Central today, and all the best with your endeavors.
Thank you so much, Duncan. I really appreciate your help here.